It's never too early to play holiday music, and it's never too early to start thinking about gifts. Whether it's for a friend or the friend in your pants, you can make this season to be jolly with Manscaped. Do your little drummer boy a favor and use the Lawnmower 4.0 to avoid another silent night in the bedroom. Then add in Manscaped's top-of-the-line shower products to have the people thinking, all I want for Christmas is you. Santa cares about his sack, and so should you. Look nice when you get naughty by going to manscaped.com and using the promo code POWERTRIP20 for free shipping and 20% off. Now that you've groomed your candy cane, it's time to make sure you don't smell like a reindeer with the Platinum Packages shower products. All of Manscaped shower gear is sulfate-free, vegan, and made to have your skin feeling hydrated and smelling fresh. But smelling good doesn't stop at the shower. The Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner can solve stank problems all day long. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. So get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code POWERTRIP20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Just use that promo code POWERTRIP20. Manscaped. Get your jingle balls ready for the holidays.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Hello and welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former NWA United States Tag Team Champion, three-time Stampede Wrestling Tag Team Champion. He is Mr. No Class, Bobby Bass. Bobby, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Thank you for having me, brother. I'm glad to be here.
What is going on in your world? What have you been up to?
Well, I'm just... Well, you know, I work in the movie business, and I'm just finished my last movie with Richard Greer on the 2nd of November, and I'm going to take the rest of the winter off because I did four movies in a row, and the old guy needs a little bit of rest.
Nice. So what are you doing on the movie sets? What are you doing with Richard Greer?
Believe it or not, I'm a bodyguard and driver. They're in for 8 weeks. I take care of them for 8 weeks, make sure to get up to studio on time, you know, make sure the hotel, you know, done and make sure they're okay.
How'd you get into that world? The acting world?
Well, my next door neighbor with the movie producer, and he asked me to, you know, for a couple, I was on the road for 24 years, I think it was. And then I wanted to take some time off, and he kept coming over and saying, hey, listen, you want to get in the movie business? I kept saying, nope, it's okay. And then one day he came over to me and my wife, Helen, and said, listen, I got an actress at my house. I'll let you come over and meet her. And, you know, he let me know. So I went over and with Daryl Hannah, the lady from Splash. And I started working with her for 8 weeks, and then just kept going from there, you know, and I got a good reputation. And I think the wrestler name had a lot to do with it, too.
Yeah, right. It's an easy transition, right? Wrestling into acting and into that world.
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty good lucrative profession, you know. And, hey, I did okay in it. I got to be honest with you. I get involved in a lot of movies, and it made me a good living, you know, outside of wrestling.
Yeah, the pay is probably pretty good, and you don't have to take any bumps. So, I mean, that's got to be a good thing.
Well, you got that right. My body is a total mess of bump taking. I was known as the bump taker in the business. You know, I've been slammed from everybody from Andre the Giant to Junkyard Dog, I guess you could say.
Nice. So how did you actually, just going back to wrestling, like, how did you actually get into the wrestling business? I know we're going back a ways, but how did you get in originally?
Well, the story is, my father, God rest his soul, was reading the paper one day, and he says, "Hey, Bobby," he said, I think there's something you're big and ugly enough to do here." And I said, "What's that, Pop?" And he said, "Work with Billy Watson's School of Wrestling down at the world-famous Sully Gym in Toronto here." And I said, "Oh, just to keep your old man happy, I'll go down and, you know, feel it out." And the next thing I know, I walked in and I fell in love with it. And I spent 24 years. My father changed my whole lifestyle, believe it or not, you know. And after 24 years, had a good career, met a lot of good people, had a few title shots, and, you know, won a couple of belts, and made a few dollars. So I know my place in history. I had a good time, and, you know, worked with some of the biggest names in the business. Well, I did good. I think I did good anyway. A lot of people may disagree, but hey, you know.
And we've seen you recently on Vice TV talking about Tales from the Territories. So how did that all pop up and come about?
Well, that was really strange that happened. Some guy phoned me up and he said, "Are you Bobby Bass?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Can you tell me about some territories?" And I said, "Well, listen, I don't know who you are or nothing." And I said, "Well, what do you do?" He said, "Well, I do the TV program." And I went, "Oh, yeah, right." I said, "Give me your office number, and, you know, if it's you, I'll get back in touch with you." So about an hour later, I phoned, and the secretary answered and put me through. Then we started talking. I started telling him a few stories about Stampede and, you know, Vancouver and you know, and a few territories I was in. He said, "I'd like to have you on TV." I said, "Oh, okay." So I figured we're going to have it in Toronto, but they flew me down to Atlanta, Georgia, with and, you know, Bret Hart put my name in there too. So he said, "You want to hear some good stories? Talk to Bobby. He knows a few." So I went down with, you know, who was all there: David Schultz, Abdullah the Butcher, and Bret Hart, and myself. It was a big, big surprise to me, but I guess they wanted me there, so I arrived in all my glory.
Yeah, and I heard, I was talking to Evan, one of the creators of the show. He said Bret Hart put a good word in for you, so I guess Bret really did help you get on there.
Yeah, Brett surprised me there. He said that we were talking near the end, and I think he cut it out of the program, but, you know, we're supposed to talk about each wrestler, what you thought of him, what he thought of his career. Anyway, Dave Schultz, I worked with Dave a lot, and I didn't work too much with Abby. I just met him one time. But Bret Hart said I had my first program in Calgary. Bobby Bass, he came in from Calgary, professional heel. He took care of me in the ring. He got a lot of heat. And, you know, I forgot all about that I had the first program with Bret, but he backed it up and said, "Yeah, we had a hell of a match," and we did, I guess.
Is that something where Stu likes for you to work, you know, not just his son, but young guys in the territory, guys he thinks a lot of, he wants you to just kind of start them off?
Well, I come in with the promise that they were going to give me the push. I have to take team specialists all my life. And we beat Bret and his brother Keith for the North American titles. And, you know, and then after that, they took him off. Somebody took him off, and then we beat Jim Neidhart and Hercules Talayas, I think it was, for the second time. So, you know, very fortunate to go into Stu territory and be champion two times. I'm very honored, and, you know, it was an honor to be in Stu territory, because he had nothing bad to say about Stu. Great guy. You know, he did talk like this. He didn't have a gun yet, you know.
What did you think, though, initially of Stu? Because everyone says, you know, how tough he is and he's hard on everybody. What did you think initially when you got to the territory and you met Stu?
I thought he was a great guy. Being stiff, yeah, I got a few shots in the back from him working with the kids. He interfered in the matches. Very honest, good payoff man. You know, and the territory was great. Everybody loved working with Stu. And I think a lot of guys went to Calgary just to meet the legendary Stu Hart. And when you met him, the story, everybody in the wrestling business imitates Stu. And yeah. The stories about him are unbelievable, you know. And nice guy, very nice guy. I thought he was. He took care of me, so, you know.
Why do you think everybody kind of goes out of their way and wants to meet him? What is it about him, do you think?
He just got good aura about him. That it's Stu Hart, you know, a great promoter, a very fair payoff man, and just the legendary Stu Hart. Everybody wanted to meet him. I know I did. When I met him, I used to chuckle and have a few laughs with him, and you know, and you learn in his territory. You work with so many different guys, not the same guys every night. And, you know, a lot of traveling in the wintertime, very dangerous. But if your heart's in it, you do it. You know what I'm trying to say to you?
Yep. So when you first got there, is that actually your first territory? Was it Stampede? Is that the first place you really started wrestling?
No, my first, if you got a minute, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I was in Kansas City. Working there with, you know, and me and Joe Pilardi, we were working there. And Pat O'Connor said to me and Joe, listen, there's a spot opening up in British Columbia. Would you guys like to go? We said, yeah, I'd love to go. So he got in touch with Al Tonko, and away we went. And we get up there, and Al said to us, you guys got 3 weeks to get over or you're gone. And we said, okay. Well, we got over, you know. And he put the straps on it, the NWA Tag Team Champions. And I think we took them off of Eddie and Jerry Morrow. We held them for a few times. And, you know, I think I was, you said three. I think I was 7 or 8 Tag Team Champions in Vancouver. I'm pretty sure, you know. I mean, I worked with Darren Sheik. We won it 3 times. Wild Don Wyatt, a couple of times, you know. But we drew the crowds. We had a lot of heat. Worked with all the top, you know, guys in the territory. And then I got the phone call from Stu to go into Stampede, and he's going to take care of me. I said, well, you know, because I was three and a half years in Vancouver. I knew it was time to leave, you know. So I went to Stampede, and I was there for, 2-3 years. And then I don't know if you know the Cuban Assassin. He said to me, listen, they got a territory in the Maritimes. It's a summer territory. We'd like you to come in and be my tag team partner. Well, we went in, and of course, we got over like $1 million. And I think I was 4 or 5 time champions there, too. You know, with Ronnie Starr, you know, great partner, Cuban, a great partner. And I was very fortunate to have these guys to take me under the wing and teach me the basic of tag team wrestling. It's not like it is today, I'll guarantee you that. And if you're a wrestling, man, you know what I'm talking about. We kept you on the edge of your seats week after week with the programs, and we sold it wherever we wanted. Great Leo Burke, of course, Bobby Kay, you know. But it all started in Vancouver with a great guy called Joe Pilardi and myself, and a great promoter, Al Tomko, may I say.
So the Maritimes, that's an interesting territory. What is it about the territory? Because it doesn't operate all year round, right? It's only for a few months, and then you're kind of in and out?
I think it's 5 months. Yeah, it's 5 month territory, and you work 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, and you never get paid for the second shot. But it's a territory they say if you go in, you don't know how to work. When you come out, you can go any place in Canada, United States, to be a worker, because you work with different guys every night, and they teach you. We have young guys come in there, and you don't know what the old saying they're asked from a hole in the ground. But, you know, when they leave that territory, boy, I tell you what, they can work. I learned from the Cuban. I was very fortunate with him about 9 or 10 years in there with him. Then Ronnie Starr came in. Very fortunate. We clicked, you know, and we were never jealous of each other. As a matter of fact, we never talked about the matches on the road when we traveled together. When we get to the arena, you know, we do our strategy there. But, man, you talk about the heat. I mean, we've been shot at. We've been stabbed. You know, riots, unbelievable. But like I said earlier, you love the business. If you don't love it, get out, go home and work in a factory. That's my opinion anyway.
How come it's only 5 months? Is it the weather is too cold for all year round, I guess?
Yeah, they have winter storms and a lot of hockey in the arenas. So you can't get the arenas because, they're all booked up for the hockey, the winter season. Then we come back in May. And like I say, a lot of traveling. But, it was a good territory. The promoter, pretty fair. And you work with a lot of guys that, I know you heard of Leo Burke, the king of the Maritimes. He worked with Harley Race. He worked with Jeff. But one of the best matches I ever saw in my entire life was in the Halifax Forum, Leo Burke and Jack Briscoe. I mean, that match was unbelievable. And I think Leo slapped the sleeper on Jack in about the 44-minute mark, got the first fall, and then he went, and the bell rang, and they gave the belt to Leo. He said, wow, he's the NWA heavyweight champion. And then the commissioner came in, and we didn't know this. They kept it in the dark. Yeah, you had to beat him two falls out of three, and Leo beat him one, but what a hell of a match. Whew! I still remember that after all these years,
Yeah, it must have been pretty good if you're remembering it all that time ago. I think Leo Burke always gets brought up when people mention that territory. First and foremost, he always gets brought up.
Yeah, he was a hell of a guy. Like a night, you heard the expression, like a night off with Leo. I mean, you can go an hour, and Leo was such a baby face. If you got on him, boy, the people just went nuts. They went, start throwing stuff at you. But he was, I got to be honest, of all the guys I've been around, and we didn't hang around together in the Maritime, the kayfabe was so strong. But years later, 10, 15 years down the road, we meet and we talk about the olden days. And, and everybody brings up Leo's name because he was such a good hand in the ring and a great guy to, work with. And, years later, a good friend. And, I was very fortunate to work with some of the top guys in the business,
I know J.J. Dillon, he always praised Leo Burke. He loved him and loved his time in that territory.
I think I mentioned to you, I was there at the time J.J. Dillon was there. He, believe it or not, if I remember correctly, he wore a red, white, and blue American jumpsuit when he went in the ring. And he had the heat. J.J. had it. And he was over. I think he was... They tried to make him a booker in there. I read something about him being a booker or something like that. I didn't pay too much attention to that. I was, I was the tag team guy with the Cuban. We had our own thing going. But, boy, I tell you, if that was a year-round territory, it'd be great. It'd be fantastic. But unfortunately, it's a winter territory. A summer territory, I'm sorry.
So you saying you're a tag team specialist, you're a tag team guy. What do you think, separates you from other wrestlers as far as being a tag guy versus a singles guy?
I think, to me, a tag team of two guys, you got to gel together and know what they're doing at all times. You can't, we just know each other's moves and get in that ring and get excitement going and work a lot of high spots with a tag team, but you can't work at a single. And, like I said earlier, I was very fortunate to be with the Cuban, took me under his wing, Ronnie Starr, a few other guys along the way, but and Joe Pilardi, And, I just found it different. They asked me a couple of times, do you want to work single belt? And I said, nah, not me. I'm a tag team guy. And I turned that down because I knew that wasn't me. I knew a tag team guy. That's with me. I could work better at tag team than I could single. Don't get me wrong. I could work the single too, but I preferred doing the tag team. And I really did. I love it.
Why do you love it so much? Why do you prefer that?
Well, like I just said, I find it more action in a tag team. You can do more stuff and get the people more pissed off at you. Oh, sorry. But to me, it suited me to a T. I was 10 years in the Maritime. I was very lucky. I'd one of the very few guys he ever brought back year after year after year because we had so much heat. And, he would call me and say, okay, I want you back this year. And, you're a great worker. You're this and that. You're blowing smoke up your butt. But glad to, nice to hear once in a while, but you know, I just love tag team with these guys I work with, and you work with Leo Burke and Bobby Kay, and you know, these guys are fantastic work, and Big Stephen Pettypaw, all these guys were great in the Maritimes, and Paul Pellerin, another great guy, you know, and I just preferred tag team, but all I can say about that, you know.
Were you always a wrestling fan? I'm just curious in that, like, as far as being aware of wrestling and getting into the business, like, were you always a fan or not particularly?
I was never a fan. Isn't that weird? I couldn't have. And I never had an interest in wrestling until my father said to me about Phil Watson's gym down at Sully's in Toronto. And I went down, and I remember Phil said, take your shirt off. Like, what? And we're standing by the ring, and boy, he just laid them big chops into me. Boom, boom, boom. And I stood there and I said, wow, what are you doing? He said, I think you're going to be okay. So I trained for 6 months, and he said, you're ready to go. And I said, no, I don't think so. I stayed a year, and I learned everything about, you know, like I say, I wanted to be a bump taker because I figure you're always in demand, bump taker, good worker, jobber, whatever you want to call us. And I was a jobber for quite a while, and every night I used to watch the matches, every night. And I learned. My first match was in Woodstock, Ontario, against Ricky Stewart. You remember him? You ever see the movie Clockwork Orange? He was yes. The big black guy, just the back guy. And he was, of course, I did the job. He picked me up, turned me upside down with a garbage can. And I said, wow, I'm a professional wrestler. And it went from there. And, you know, matter of fact, in 1967, I read in the back of a wrestling magazine, wrestlers wanted in Paducah, Kentucky for Phil Golden production. I snuck across the border, and I started working for Phil. And then Pepe Lopez, God bless his soul, took me to the ring, taught me the Germans, got me in the ring. And, you know, all these guys saw something in me, I guess, and they trained me and worked with me. Paul Christie, got another guy that passed away, Randy Savage, you know, he was the opposite. He was in, well, we were in Paducah, I think he was in Nashville. But, you know, all these guys that you met on your career and on the way up, and you're still around, you know. It was great. I loved what I did. My wife would tell you, I get in the ring and work for free. I loved it so much, you know.
So what name did you go under at first? Because you weren't Bobby Bass at first. Like, what did you go under at first?
Okay, I'm going to tell you. I don't say that to them. They called me Percy Pringle. Don't you laugh there now. I'm trying to look at your face. You give me a smile. They were going to do a thing in Paducah, but they're going to do a thing with the Pringle potato chip. You know, I was the son of the very famous Pringles, but it didn't work out that way. So I kept that name. And then the Bass brothers actually were in Paducah. There was Donnie, Ma Bass, and Ronnie. And I went from Paducah into Kansas. Before I went to Vancouver, Ronnie broke his leg. They were in Pensacola, Florida, and they wanted another Bass brother, and they remembered me and the work I did, so I went down and Pensacola, Florida, and they, ready for this, you want to call me Heathrow? It's a joke, right? Heathrow Bass. I said, nah, nah, nah. Then you want to call me Clem? I said, nah, 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 nah. So I said, you got Bobby, you got Ronnie, now you got Bobby. So that's how the name Bobby Bass came around. And then the Texas Outlaw, of course. And what else? Oh, I was in Portland, Oregon, and me and Joe Paletti were the tag team champs up in Canada. And he brought us down to work with their champs. Who was it? Moondog Maine. And I forget the other guy's name. I'm sorry. And then Ron Bass said, I don't want him using that name. Ronnie, what's with you? You know, we had a thing going. I don't want him to use that name. So Don said, you want to change it? So somebody said, hey, Kincaid. I used the name Bobby Kincaid in Portland. And then back up in Canada with, you know, Bobby Bass. But that's okay. You want to be like that. God rest Ronnie. He's gone now. Ma's gone. Donnie's gone. I think I'm the only Bass around, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you're the last bass remaining. You know, it's interesting. Paul Bearer, Percival Pringle, he was Percy Pringle, the second version of Percy Pringle, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny, Paul. We were good friends, believe it or not. We were in Japan together, sitting around a table, and somebody said to me, Percy Pringle, you're the one in the original Percy Pringle. And he said, no. He said, Bobby Bass with the first original Percy Pringle. And I thought that was kind of cool that he would, you know, point me out and say, no, you know, Bobby was. And I said, oh, yeah, I was, you know. So everybody goes through names in this business. You know that yourself. But, yeah, Percy Pringle. A long time ago. Gee.
What a unique name, though. Percy Pringle, Percival Pringle, what a unique name. How was he, though, Bill Moody? How was he as a guy, Mr. Wow. Paul Bearer?
Great guy. Fantastic. We had a great time. And, you know, friendly guy. We had a few brewskis together. And just had a great time. Paul is not like the character you see on TV. He's warm. He's gentle. He's kind, you know. And people think that you're that character 24/7. I'm thank God that I wasn't. You know, like you got guys like Killer Car Croup, the bald head, the German thing, and people recognize him everywhere. I kept a very low profile when I worked. You know, I went out, get out of the ring, got my car, drove to my aunt and uncles or something like that, and it helped me because what Bass? We never see him around. No, you pay to see me in the ring. That you understand that, you know. So. That worked for me anyway, you know. So never went to too many bars because you always had that one kid in town who thought he was tough. And I heard the Cuban tell me he went in the bar one time and the guy got all drunked up and said, "You're going to kick your ass." And Cuban said, "What are you nuts? There's four of us here. You think we're going to let you touch us? You know, you'd be going home in an ambulance." And the guy, whoa, so, you know, and he walked away, which is a good move on his behalf, you know.
Yeah, he's gonna get killed.
Drinking coffee, by the way.
Nice. He'll get killed there. So you weren't a big drinker, big partier, not a big guy, you know, out on the road enjoying the nightlife.
I went to a few country bars, you know, but I never got drunk. I never got belligerent. I never, you know. Damn, Bobby Bass, the big time wrestler. Yeah, you go to these people, these clubs, and people recognize you. And they, what do you call it? Nine times out of ten, they're fans. Hey, how you doing, Bob? Is everything okay? Or, you know. And the thing was, in the Maritimes, the kayfabe was so strong. We had our own country bar that the baby faces couldn't go in. The security, if they came, said, "Sorry, you can't come in here." The heel bar. I thought that an honor. Wow, we got a bar that won't let the baby faces in. And we couldn't go in their bars. And we never did. If I saw Leo Burke walking up the street with his family, without causing a fuss, I'd have crossed over the other side and keep going. You know, that's how strong the kayfabe was in that territory. And I'm thinking, and we don't have that today. And you know that, you know.
Yeah, yep. Kayfabe is dead. What do you think about that? It's not even close to anywhere where it used to be as far as that level.
Yeah, you're right. You see these, and I'm not a big fan of wrestling today, I'll be honest with you. I think most of these kids should go back to the gym or whoever taught them, teach them properly. You know, I think they were just in it to grab the, whatever they charge, grab the money and throw them in the ring. You know, you see a guy, 150 pound, buggy whip arms, you know, turn sideways, he disappears. He doesn't know how to throw a headlock. He doesn't know how to do a hip toss. You know, an arm bar, what's that? You know, and we had to learn all that stuff back in our day, you know, and all they're doing to me, you may cut me off anytime you want, but hey, all I want to do is get their 15 minutes of bump taken in, doing this, doing that. They don't care about the audience on the other side of the ropes. They're working for themselves. That's my opinion. You may get a few comments on that, but that's what they have to call me, no class. You know, I just tell it like it is. One kid said to me one day, "Mr. Bass, would you watch my match and tell me what's going on?" I said, "Yeah, sure will." So I watched it and I told him, "You did this, you know, you could have done this a little bit different, that a little bit different." He said to me, "Hey, old man, what do you know?" And I answered him like this, 17-time tag team champion, junior champion of Canada, around the world three or four times, worked with some of the bigger names in the business, but I guess I don't know shit. And you should have seen the look in his face. You know, Joe, when you phoned me, I was very surprised. Because I've been out of the business 20 years, but I still get called to do this and do that. And I find that an honor. And somebody stopped me for an autograph. Whoa. You know, and I still get about 75 or 80 hits a week on my Facebook. Bobby, how you doing? What's new? And I answer every one of them, you know. So I keep in touch with the fan. But when I roused it, I never did. But, you know, and people tell me when I meet them, hey, remember this? No. You know, it's just a pleasure to be a pro wrestler and be still alive, be honest with you. And, you know, the fans are fantastic. The Calgary fans are fantastic. Vancouver, the Maritimes, they're all great fans, you know. And I'm very honored to be in the ring and entertaining them.
So when that guy was asking you for advice, how come he asked you for advice if he wasn't really going to listen to it? You know what I mean? That was kind of odd on his part. He wasn't really wanting to get any criticism from you.
He's an asshole. These young kids today work three matches to think they're superstars. Hey, do what we did, you know. Drive 7 days a week, pay for your own hotel, pay for your own food, sleep in the car when you got no money. You know, these kids wouldn't last a week on the road, 2 weeks on the road. And I'm telling you like it is. It just bugged me so much that they think they're superstars. And most of them can't work. I'm sorry. Telling you like it is. I wish I was 25, 30 years younger. I'd get in there and show them a thing or two. But I'm 75 years old now, you know. And I still go to one or two matches a year. And say hello to the boys, but the kids, no respect for us old guys. And I call us old guys, or old pros, or whatever you want to say. And you know, they haven't a clue, you know. And
so you follow it a little bit, but not really. But you like once or twice a year you'll follow it, but you're not a fan of the current product, obviously.
No, I'm not. I, my friend Chris LaPlante had a place, Crossfire Wrestling, up in Welland, Ontario. I go up and see Chris because he has some guys that can work, you know. And he had a good card, family show, no cursing, no swearing, no grabbing yourself. Matter of fact, when we got in the business, we were told, don't grab yourself, don't spit, don't swear, you know. It's a family show. And geez, I saw guys, you know. Some girl at ringside, you big effing this and effing that. And I said, holy God, what are you guys doing? You know, and they're trying to get heat. We don't get heat like that. You know, to me, that's cheap heat. And a lot of the old guys think of, you know, same thing. You know, they call them the N-word a lot, you know, during the crowd. You never do that. A cheap, cheap heat. Get out there and get it the easy way. If you're a good worker, you can get heat. No problem. People will tell you that the Halifax Forum, we used to sell it out, and I bought a main event with Leo Burke. I'd go to the ring first, and I wouldn't make it to the ring, and you would hear 8,000 people. No class, no class, no class. I haven't done nothing. Leo gets in the ring. We do one or two moves. I'm a dirty guy. I do something to him. Whoa, no class, and the bottles start flying. And, you know, and to me, you're doing it the right way. That's me, you know, and Leo loved it. I loved it. The guys loved it. And I'm not saying a big, big top heel, because I'm just an ordinary guy that knows how to, you know, get a crowd going. But, you know, these kids today, unbelievable, you know, to me, you know.
Yeah, it's weird. They don't really call in the ring hardly anymore that I've seen and that I've talked to the guys and I've heard that from them. And no. They practice most of the match in the back. So, like, when they're looking for crowd reactions, they can't adapt. Like, there's no adaptation. It's just like bang, bang, boom, next.
I remember, and you know this, I was in one dressing room, which we were, and Leo's in another. The referee came out and said, 35 minutes, Leo sleeper. That's all I had to know. I called a match in the ring. You know, the heel calls a match. And I remember one time in Bridgewater, Nova Scotia, I got Leo in the corner, and I'm throwing shots, boom, and the crowd's not reacting. I said, Leo, I'm going to throw a shot, block it, and start boxing me. Leo said, boom, boom, and the crowd went crazy. You got to have, I don't know if you're going to agree with me or disagree, but you got to have a psychology in the ring to know how to work a crowd, bring them up, bring them down, let's go home. Would you agree or disagree?
I agree. Yes.
Yeah, and the kid today, like you saw, I saw him in the dressing room. It's two to the left. I said, what are you guys doing? We're practicing. Practicing what? Our match. I take three steps to the left. You throw a punch. I duck. Two steps to the right. I said, you guys kidding me? Why don't you call in the ring? And here's what they said. What are you talking about? Call what? I said, oh, my God. You guys don't know how to call it in the ring? And that's an art in itself. You know that. That they call it in the ring without people knowing it. And not that I mean, we all learned it. We all learned it. And I think that's why our matches were so good. You know, we got that crowd reaction all the time. And if you did something and you call it in the ring, boom, it gets over. You don't say, what did I do in the dressing room? Supposed to move left or supposed to move right? That's bullshit. I'm sorry. That's the way I feel about it. You know.
Right. And what if something goes wrong? They can't adapt or they can't do something else. They go back to the spot where they screwed up and they start going again. It just, it doesn't look right. It looks completely right. Fake.
Yeah. I'd be honest. I messed a few high spots up, you know, finished it up, but I grabbed Leo and said, let's do this. We'll do something different. I remember one time in Halifax, me and Leo were going at it. And just how simple it is to get heat and set up a match for the next show. Me and Leo going at it. Boom, boom, boom. And about maybe 35, 40 minutes in, I said, Leo, headlock, drop down, grabbing the sleeper. I'll be coming off that rope at 90 miles an hour. And no, I said, turnbuckle. And I'll be coming out, grab me. He grabbed me the sleeper. I'm fighting. I said, Leo, I'm going to drive you back into turnbuckle, drop. And I nail you a couple of times. I go to throw you to the turnbuckle again. You reverse it. I'm coming out. Grab me in the middle of the in ring. He's got you. Come on. He grabbed me, my feet go right up near, and he got the sleeper on me. I'm getting excited talking about this.
Yeah.
and who come out the dressing room? The Cuban climbed the top rope, big elbow, Leo. Boom. Who come out the baby face dressing room? His brother, Bobby Kay. We're battling like crazy. Referee breaks it up. There's your match, next main event for the Halifax Forum. And people bought that. You know, simple and easy. You know, the kid today haven't a clue. And again, you may agree or disagree, but that's how I feel, you know. And I've been there.
I agree.
I've done it.
I agree. Different. Yeah, you know? Different time for sure. But I like watching. I like some of today's wrestling, but some of it, though, it's very obvious when there's cooperation between the guys and they miss a spot, then go back and do the spot over again. Like that kind of stuff. It takes me out of the match completely.
Yeah, it takes me right out, too, you know. When I see a guy get in there and he's 155 pounds and he got no physique or nothing like that. And I just said to myself, wow, whoever trained him must have wanted the money. You know, and you know yourself, everybody watched the WWF or whatever you want to call it, wanted to be a wrestler. And it just like everybody who was a wrestler and didn't make it in the business trained him. And he didn't train him properly. And that just pisses me off. You should take pride in what you did in that ring and outside the ring to present yourself with a pro wrestler. When I left the business in 92, I was asked 20, 30 times to want to start a wrestling school. And I said no. And I'm going to tell you the reason why. I was so tired of the business. My body had it. 24 years, my body was a wreck. And I kept saying, oh, you'll be a good trainer. Ronnie Hutchinson, you know Ronnie?
Yes.
Ronnie trained Edge, Christian, Trish Stratus. He's a good buddy of mine. As a matter of fact, I just talked to him a couple hours ago. And when we talk about the olden days, and you know, the kids today, there's a few good ones out there, don't get me wrong. But boy, there's a lot of bad ones too, you know. You got to sit there and shake your head. And hey, I'm going to tell you something, Joe, and you're going to agree. I hope you are. They don't know that four-letter word, S-E-L-L, sell. Am I right or wrong?
That's a big part of it. Got to sell.
Yeah. I seen a match somewhere, and the guy supposedly kicked him in the private, let's say, right? Okay. Guy went down, got right back up, and continued to fight. So I came to the dressing room. I said, hey, let me kick you in the private for real and see if you get right back up. Because we mean. I said, psychology, my friend. If you get kicked in the private, you sell it. You don't jump right back up. Somebody poked you in the eye. You don't wave it off. You grab your eye and let the guy work on you for a while. Throw you out of the ring, take a rest, come back in. He'll call, you know, iron drag, slam, boom, whatever. I said, guys, I get so mad. I don't even talk anymore, you know. That's how mad I get at these guys. And all they do is take these crazy bumps today. You know yourself. Somebody's going to get hurt, you know.
It is crazy. I was at a show not that long ago. And these two guys turned on the one guy and they beat him down. So you think like, oh, he's done. He should be selling. He gets back up and he challenges the two guys. I was like, oh, like you ruined the whole thing. Like they, where was That's the selling yeah. involved? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I told you, I'm 75 years. I started 75 years old. I started in 1967. Japan, Australia, Germany, England. I had a good career. I worked hard at it too. People think, you know, but you do. Any of the old timers worked their butts off to prove who they are and be great entertainers. Today, kids, right off the top of my head, I can't name 5-6 guys that I have seen in the last year that are any good. You know, they're just terrible. Terrible. Again, that's me. You probably get some complaints about this, but that's okay. You know, be where I was, and be what I did, and go where I was, and put your body through what I did. I didn't come out of the gym in 3 months or 2 months. I came out after a year because I wanted to learn everything about the business. And like I said earlier, I wanted to be a jobber because the jobber's always in demand. And then they took notice of me, and boom, I got to push. You know, so if you work hard at it and believe in what you're doing and love the business, Joe, you're going to go someplace. But as I said earlier, there's guys in this business who thought they were good. And you know yourself, promoters call you, you know, they're the one to make you good, bad, or you're no good or this. And maybe they wasn't good enough to be in the business. And they lasted a year. Then they hate I hear guys say, I hate that professional wrestling. My thing to them is, oh, why? You didn't get it put over? You wasn't good enough or what? Then they clam up and don't talk to you. But you ask them a question, they won't answer. They said, well, how come you did all right? And I said, I studied my craft. I learned what I had to do to be a worker. And I worked, like I say, me and Jake the Snake out in Vancouver had the program. And we sold out every week. We went someplace. You know, Jake the Snake versus Bobby Bass of Texas Outlaw. And you know, Jake knew how to work. I knew how to work. We knew the ring psychology, and it worked. That's all, you know. So, you know, what else can I tell you? That Roy McClarity, great referee, great wrestler in his day. You know, Chuck Simpson, and all these guys you work with. I still see Chuck after 40 years. You know, and we still talk about the old days. We all love doing that. But no, I talk a lot, don't I?
I love it. Speaking of Vancouver, though, like I want to go back to Iron Sheik, as you mentioned him before and how you guys are tag champs. What was it like teaming with Sheiky Baby? Because obviously, you know, everybody that follows the business knows he's got a reputation of being a bit of a wild man.
Bit of an asshole, too, you know. Sheiky Baby was all right, but he would hurt you if he could. You know, the young guys you take advantage of. I used to drive in my van with him, and you know, I didn't like the guy, be honest with you, because I thought he was, excuse me, a great amateur, great shooter, but if he wanted to hurt you in the ring, he would hurt you. But you know, if he threw it wrong. He put a bad move on or potato number something. Well, we all get potatoed in the ring. You know that, Joe. But he would take advantage because he would hurt somebody. And I worked with him, yeah, three-time champion in Vancouver. And then I worked with him in Portland. I worked with him there. And Don Owen's brother, I forget his name, used to have the shoots, have a shoot with all the guys. And we had to work to shoot. $25 to the winner, $15 to the loser, whatever it is. But, you know, like, I had to shoot with Lonnie Main, Sheik, Ed Wachowski, Buddy Rose, and we all worked it. I mean, nobody got hurt. But he could be a handful at times, you know. I remember a story about the Sheik. I'm pretty sure it's true, but the guy told me. Roy McClurdy with the matinee idol in the 50s and 60s. He worked with Vernon Gagne, all Buddy Rogers, all these guys. Great, great, great worker. And we used to help Roy set the ring up. And then he used to take a few guys in the ring and work with them. Boom, boom, boom. And you're truly included. And she came in there one time, and one of the guys said, "Watch it, Roy. He's pretty dangerous." Roy had that little cigar. Yeah. We're talking. Don't forget about it. He does. I don't know what happened, but the Sheik said something, and Roy went behind him. And I swear to God, I said it. He put the sleeper on him for real and put the Sheik down. Put him up. Boom, boom, boom. And then he lay there for a few minutes, and then he brought him back, and she went, Mr. Roy, how are you? You know. And the guy swore that, excuse me, guy swore that happened. You know, so yeah, he's a pretty nasty guy. You know, I think he's doing. I did a wheelchair now, is he not?
Yeah,
I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Jake the Snake. What about Jake? Did you like Jake? Was he a good guy?
Oh, Jake was great. Yeah, I got along great with Jake. I really did. I see him at the CAC thing. Give big hugs and talk about the old days, you know. Jake was a hell of a worker. I got to be that with you. And I'm glad he went where he went, you know. He got over, and I think he's a little bit bitter because he didn't make a whole lot of money, he said, you know. But he did all right. Don't kid yourself. And, of course, he had a drug problem. So, but Jake's still all right, you know.
When you were in the Maritimes, there's another very, very famous guy you work with. What about Rowdy Roddy Piper? What did you think about the Hot Rod?
You know, you're going back to the 80s, huh? I think at the 80s.
Even the 70s sometimes. Yeah.
I remember Roddy come in. We got along real good together. I don't think I worked against him, you know. But I remember one time Tom Stanton was driving it to New Glasgow. It was raining like hell, and we stopped and got some coffee. Me, Cuban, Roddy, and Tom Stanton. Tom got a piece of pie, and he had driving the court. He went around that corner, and the car, how do you call it? Hydroplane?
Yep.
Yeah, hydroplane. And it flipped. It ended up in a creek. All upside down. Holy Jesus Christ, you know? And Cuban was really cool. He said, "Amigo, we undo the safety belts." And we undid the safety belt, get out. They're only about 2 feet of water. But we're up on the road, and the RCMP came and asked what happened. It was raining, we're soaked. And we said, "We got to get to New Glasgow." We get to New Glasgow. And of course, we get shit from Emile Dupre for being late. Never mind the car accident. We were late. But greatest match we ever had that night. We were so full of anxiety. Is that what you say? Or whatever the word is. But yeah. And I saw Roddy a few times after that. "Hey, Bobby, how you doing?" Big hug and all that, you know. I was the type of guy that, you know, my friend Bret Hart, Roddy Piper, Dave Schultz, I never asked, "Can you get me in the WWF? I never asked. And they say, why didn't you want to come in? I wanted to make it on my own, you know. And I did TV taping for WWF up in Canada. But no, it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be. I was happy doing the territories, you know, raising hell, I guess you could say, across the country. But yeah, even Brett, when we talked last time, he said, when the camera wasn't rolling, he said, "You never asked." I never wanted to, be honest with you. I was happy up here, you know. So that's why I didn't get into WWF. I didn't ever ask.
How did you work some of the TV tapings? Like, how did that come to be, and how did that come to pass?
Gorilla Monsoon, isn't it? Am I saying that right, Gorilla?
Yep.
He saw me working and he liked. And then I used to work Maple Leaf Gardens. You know the old saying about Maple Leaf Garden, don't you? When you walk that ramp, you got a maple. And I'm here to tell you that's bullshit. You know? But I was doing jobs, of course, you know, for all the guys. And then, of course, you work the garden, you do the TV. And I did the TV, I did my fair share. And then I started, believe it or not, I started getting a lot of heat on the ramp at No Class Bobby Bass. And the next thing I know, I'd work in Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte. And I'd get in the heat. And I forget who the booker was, but he said, we're going to make you the manager of Kabuki. And what they did, and oh, we got over like $1 million in the gardens. I was doing TV interviews and me and Kabuki, and can Bass and Kabuki be stopped? And, you know, just a great time, you know. And then they were going to give me the Canadian TV champion. I was supposed to take it off of Brian Blair. And I think a 2 week before we were supposed to go back to taping, WWF come in. That was gone, you know. Was I upset? Yeah, a little bit, you know. But no, you're crying over spilt milk, the way I look at it. I just went on my merry way and kept doing what I'm doing, you know. But I had the opportunities, like, in Canada. So,
do you remember who you worked at the WWF tapings?
Oh, Lord. Geez, so long ago, I'd have to look at my book. I worked with all the stuff. I worked with Junkyard Dog, you know. I wasn't too impressed with him, you know. He'd give, and he won't, you know, he take, and won't give, you know. I mean, you put the guy over with the big hip tuck, the big slams, and everything else, and you go to throw a shot, and he looked at you. Say, hey, give me something. You make me look like an idiot. I worked, believe it or not, Leo Burke at the Babyface in the gardens. And we had a hell of a mat. I actually got cheered. I went, who the hell are you? You know, wow. Can't be me, but it was. Yeah, I worked Tay Team, a lot of Tay Team there. There was a guy called Goldie Rogers, God rest his soul. And we worked with the British Bulldogs in Calgary a lot. So we knew what was going on. But we worked Maple Leaf Gardens, and 22,000 people. We tore the house down, and they pinned me. Well, you know, they thought they're going to get Goldie, but, you know, I said, yeah, let's do it, you know. And Goldie said to me, that's the best match he ever had in his life. I said, Dave, Goldie, we worked him out in Calgary. And do you know I hold the record in Maple Leaf Garden for the fastest pin?
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was in the dress room, and Tiger G, Singh, and the Sheik were going to work a couple of weeks later, and they came to me and said, Bobby, we need to get Tiger over real quick. I said, okay. So I said, Tiger, how long do you want? He goes, oh, I don't know, 5 minutes. I said, hey, why not under a minute? He goes, what? I said, under a minute. I said, I'll go to the ring first. You come in. I throw the big shot. You duck, put me in a Cobra clutch, I think he used. Down I went. I think with 11, 12 seconds. But it's business. People don't know. The kids, oh, what are you doing that for? They don't understand. It's a business. And that worked out good for me because he took me to Puerto Rico. He took me to India, all these places. And when we had the Hall of Fame dinner in Toronto here, he said, see that fellow over there, Bobby Bass? What a great worker. He's a businessman. I felt so proud when he said that. You know, he never forgot. And he had a school named after him. He invited me and Helen up to be there for the opening. You know, the business to me, it no big deal, you know, as far as I'm concerned anyway. Most guys are, what? Well, I'm not doing that, but go home, you know, the way I look at it, you know.
Hey, it was good business for him, man. You know? Good business for the Sheik.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and the Sheik said, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. You know, so, but, you do what you got to do, you know. And I knew that would pay off somewhere down the road. And it did, you know. It's called being a professional, being a businessman, and being a worker. in my eyes, the way I think about it, you know. I mean, yeah, if Absolutely. You do a job for you, yeah, you got it. How long, you know? And that's the way it is. But I, you know, man, some of these old guys, you know, they're not in the spotlight anymore. The career's ending. Why don't you put Bobby Bass up? No, I'm not doing that. You know, I say, yeah, I don't care. You know, when I was coming down of my big career, I put guys over. You know, we put them over in a way that I didn't get hurt. You know, that you know, a simple, easy move, boom, you snap it, bang, you're right back up again. I mean, I did job for Leo Burke and the tag team and all that. It's business, guys. It's nothing personal. You know, you come back the following week and you're still on top. Or we always send me an event and let you work single with Leo. But it was, T.J., I keep saying it to you. It's with the business. And it's pro wrestling, you know?
Definitely. Yep. What did you think about Dynamite Kid? You were mentioning the Bulldogs. What did you think about Dynamite Kid?
I first met him in Japan, 1980, I think it was. And we clicked. We hit it off. We worked together in Japan. I remember he threw me out the ring and he grabbed a Coke bottle and smashed it and sliced me with it. And, you know, we went in the ring, had a hell of a match. He got the pin. And, I mean, when he sliced me, he swiped it at me and I moved back. I shouldn't say he sliced me. That's not true. But anyway, next time we met was in Calgary. And I know a lot of people say he was a dirty son of a bitch. He put a lot of filthy ribs. He hurt you if he didn't like you when he worked with you. Never happened to me. We had great matches. I went on a WWF tour across Canada. And I forget who didn't show up, but he phoned me and he said, "You're working with the kid." Kid said, "Great, I got somebody I can work with." Bret Hart, the same way, you know. He never hurt me, not once. And I believe in his book, Pure Dynamite, he mentioned in his book, one of the good workers I worked with in Canada was Bobby Bass. And that's an honor, too, you know. Because this guy, he'd tear your head off if he wanted to. But no potatoes, just a good, good match. But my style was a lot like it, a lot of bump taking over the top rope, chairs, you know. And we both use them in the ring. He said, "Grab a chair, nail me." Okay, you got it, you know. But, yeah, it was great working with him. I know a lot of guys said he was an asshole, you know. I was there and Chris Benoit came in, skinny little kid. And then he went on the juice and he went on the, you know, steroids. And he idolized the Dynamite Kid. You know, he was a carbon copy of him, in yep. my eyes, you know. But, yeah, he went on to great success, and you know what happened. I don't want to bring it up, but you know what happened.
Yes, yes. Obviously, both Benoit and Dynamite were great in-ring workers, though, definitely, for sure. Both great workers.
Oh, yes, they were. They were fantastic. You know, you can't knock him for his work. But he played a lot of ribs on a lot of guys. I heard a lot of guys. But again, like you just said, Joe, you cannot take anything. I think he revolutionized for the small guys in the business. He was there. He did. He bumped, taking like crazy. And he was just fantastic. You know, he was great. I got a lot of respect for him. No, so.
Yep, I agree. So as we wind it down, we head towards the finish. What's your favorite territory? What's the favorite place you work? Would it be Stampede?
Well, I got a couple. Stampede would be number one. I got to be honest, I got three. I got Vancouver, Calgary, and the Maritimes. They were all good to me. All the crowd were fantastic. Yeah, I can't say one. I'm sorry. I got to say the three. I got the break in Vancouver, I got the break in Calgary, and I got the break in the Maritimes. And they used to ask me in Japan, what are the best countries that you get, you know, hated and booed? And I said, Canada. You know, I worked the state too, don't get me wrong. I mean, we took the titles off of Flash and Rocket Monroe. Remember them guys? They mm-hmm. were in Pensacola, and me and Donnie took them off of them. But a lot of heat there too. But Canada, to me, I mean, a lot of guys can go to state to make the name, but it's hard to make it in Canada. And that's what I found, but I made it. I don't know how. I don't know why, but here I am, you know, in Canada where I live. And a lot of people know me. So I must have been doing something right.
So. Yeah, definitely. So do you have some favorite matches or some favorite opponents of maybe a couple guys that you've wrestled that really stand out above, you know, all others?
I would say number one, Leo Burke. Number two, believe it or not, the Cuban Assassin. I turned on him and we went at it. That was a great match. Who else? Hubert Gallant, Stephen Pettit. These are all Canadian guys now. You know, all these guys from around Canada. I found they were great workers. And, you know, Montreal. I worked Montreal, their territory. Jacques Rougeau and his brother. Mike the Judge Dubois, who became Alex Smirnoff, of course. And Freddie Sweetan. All these guys were great matches, you know. And I kept a scrapbook, believe it or not, like wow, a mark. Nice. But I got all these photographs, all these memories, and all these pictures. And Gil Hayes, God bless Gil Hayes, he just passed away not too long ago. And of course, Bret Hart, I worked a lot with Bret and his family, you know. And yeah, a lot of good matches, Joe, a lot of good memories. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I know my body's a mess, but I'm the guy that chose to be in that business. I'm the guy that chose to do what I did for a living, and thank God I did. I really super enjoyed it, you know. And I want to thank you for having me on the program tonight. I appreciate that. That came as a complete shock to me. But I'm glad I'm talking to you. I hope I give you a little insight, you know, a little. When you can tell me when this is going to be on? I haven't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's going to be on when?
Probably
get in touch
a week
with
or
me
two.
And let me know. So I can...
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, well, you got my thank you.
Yeah, before we let you go, is there any, like, where social media-wise, where you kind of want people to follow you or reach you, or you don't really do social media too much?
Boy, I do a lot of social media. It's BobbyBass4719@gmail.com. So they can get in touch with me there if you want. And, I don't mind people, you know, talking to me and asking me what's going on and, you know, what their views and this and that is. I sort of enjoy it, to be honest with you, you know. You know what the old say, the old timers take you back a few years and tell you a couple of tales you never heard, you know.
Yeah.
But, I have no problem with that. Ever. So, you know, do you want to get in touch? Please, don't be shy. Say hello, you know.
All right, awesome.
Now, don't give my phone number to the women because the women be knocking on my door, kicking, trying to get in. I tell a joke one time. I was in a hotel and a girl was kicking and screaming at the door and hollering and all that. But Joe, I finally get up out of bed and open the door and let her out. That's one of my nice. Corny jokes.
Nice.
But anyway, again, Joe, thank you for getting in touch and talking. I really enjoyed it.
So, yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate all the time.
The last line. Thank you, sir.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.